Is there any empty seats? You got empty seats? There's some people who are looking for seats. Okay.
Yeah, there's one here.
Okay. Hi, everybody. My name is Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here this morning, this afternoon. Sun's a little hot out there. I'm glad to be sober. I'm glad to be in a gathering of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank the committee, and Shirelli in particular, and Peter and Joy for extending the privilege of me doing this. I think it's a privilege to be allowed to come and sit in these meetings. I hope I don't the subject is sponsorship, and you have to sponsor some people. I mean, and then look what falls off of him. Joke. But it's one of my favorite subjects in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's probably as I think about it, it's probably one of the most abused statement and the misabused statement and the misunderstood statement in all of Alcoholics Anonymous, because it's people act like it's just starting or something, and Bill Wilson's sponsor was his sponsor until his sponsor died. Debbie Thatcher, Bill always said that Debbie was his sponsor. And from that little thing, from Bill Wilson, from Debbie Thatcher to Bill Wilson, it goes back further than that. It goes back to Roland Hazard. It goes back a long, long way, right up to this particular moment in time. Sponsorship has always been an intricate saving grace for members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and particularly if you're a guy like me. Now, when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on the 4th day of November 1959, I was not looking for a sponsor. Matter of fact, I wasn't looking for anything except get a little closer smell of the women who came into that penitentiary that day. And I didn't know what I was getting into. I didn't understand why these people were doing anything, what they were coming up there for, what was going on. I thought all my life in different places I've been, it always been a little group of little blue-lipped people always showed up on Sunday morning and try to converse you to something. But I didn't care because I was getting tired of these guys I was hanging around with. And so I went in and sat in this meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wasn't, I'm sober as I am right now. I hadn't had a drink or a pill or any type of drug to my system for a period of time that I knew about because, you can't get much of it in solitary confinement, for Christ's sake. But I would have tried if I hadn't figured out to get it under the door. But I sat in that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and these people were talking strange to me. They were talking about being sober. And what was strange about that to me was that I thought, big deal. I'm sober too. What's the big deal about it? But I didn't know what was going on. But I was seeing these people were doing in those days what Alcoholics Anonymous, in my opinion, was constructed and given by the hand of God to people like us to be doing. They were carrying a message to the alcoholic who still suffered, and they were doing it for free, and they were doing it for fun. And that was the hook that almost killed me, because I didn't know what they were doing it for. I couldn't figure them out. I'll tell you, it was a very sick part of the situation, and a guy came into on a panel one day and introduced me to a book called Alcoholics Anonymous, and I sat down in this institution where I was at, and I started to go through this book, and not for any particular gracious reason, but to prove to you that this program wouldn't work for me, that my case was so very horribly different, that I didn't know what was going on. And I sat there and read this book, and strange things started to happen to me. I started to do something that is a requirement for an alcoholic of my type to obtain any degree of sobriety and maintain it with any degree of comfort whatsoever. I started to identify with the alcoholics who wrote the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have come to believe, in all the years that's come to pass and all that period of time, that it is a matter of identification. If you can't identify with what goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous, that's why our singleness of purpose is so important. That's why one alcoholic talks to another alcoholic. That's why it's so important. Even though I didn't understand what these people were doing, even though I couldn't comprehend anybody in their life taking time out of their busy life to come to talk to a bunch of goofs sitting in a penitentiary, well, I couldn't figure that out other than the fact that they were just another little thin, blue-lipped people coming around trying to save the day or something. I couldn't figure that was my thought process. That's the way it had been all my life, and I never had anything to do with them anyhow. But there was something about these people that was different than anything I had ever seen. Now, I had had people come to our jail cells in the county jail on Sunday morning and sing us psalms, you know, and we went there. Sometimes they'd pass out cigarettes. You know, they did a lot of things. I see people come up there bringing their messages. And I'm not saying things are wrong. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that for me, an alcoholic, they were just water under the bridge. Because I did not believe that I would ever, ever, ever be saved from anything. I thought I was doomed. I thought I would die. I thought I was going to die in hell. Or what the psychiatrist and the sociologist told me all my life, I'm going to die in an institution, I'm going to make it to the gas chamber, I'm going to get my brains brought out, I'm going to get killed in one of those gang fights, or I'm going to die of an overdose. That was my M.O. when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's not a very bleak outlook for anything if you really want to know the truth. But it was an absolute perfect state because I was wide open for any kind of light that would be shined in that darkness. And what people like you did, they shined a speck of light into that darkness with my curiosity. And when this man by the name of Les Hamlin, who's dead now, walked into that penitentiary that day, a man that I knew did 23 flat years in the penitentiary, got my attention. I couldn't figure out what he was doing, and I didn't know that when he was my baseball coach for the San Quentin Pirates, well, I was a star second baseman for the San Quentin Pirates. I didn't know that he was going to AA meetings. I didn't have, so you can imagine my breath being taken when he walked back in there and he stood at the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous and delivered to me what was the greatest message of hope that anybody had ever given me at that point. He said, I didn't have to live that way anymore if I didn't want to. And he said, I didn't have to do it like that anymore. And he told me about that book, so I started to read that book. And I started to identify with things in the book. The first thing I identified was that thing called the phenomenon of craving. And the reason I identified with that was because every opportunity that I had in life, whether it was to go to school, whether it was to play ball, whether it was to raise a family, anything, every opportunity that I had in life, I never got it taken because I thought it was because of my background. I thought it was because I came out of them drunken people, from them drunken places, from them things that I lived in, and the gangs I ran with, and the atrocities that I committed, and the things that went on and on and on in my life. And somewhere along the line, in reading that thing in the doctor's opinion, it dawned upon me that the reason none of these good things that were offered to me ever happened to me was I took a drink of alcohol. And right then and there, I believe, was my first step into obtaining any degree of sobriety and any degree of comfort whatsoever. Because what I started to do, and it's unbeknownst to me, I'm not knowing I'm doing it. At the first time in my life, I'm starting to assume the responsibility for my own actions. That it was no longer anybody else's fault. It wasn't my neighborhood's fault. It wasn't my gang's fault. It wasn't the alcohol I drank. It wasn't the drugs that I used. It wasn't the state of California or the federal government. It wasn't my parents' fault. It was nobody else's fault. I was the culprit. And so in the ensuing period of time that I spent in that penitentiary, I, to the best of my ability that I was capable of doing with letter writings and things like that, I tried to complete the first 9 steps of our program of recovery. And it wasn't a complete thing, but it was a real scratching the surface, because there's some things today that I haven't really resolved in my own mind and my own heart, but I probably never will resolve them either. But I've learned that you can live with them. So when I walked out of the penitentiary 47 years ago, the fourth day of this month, I came out to this world not knowing anything about what is really important for a guy like me, how to belong to a fellowship of recovery. How to be one among many, just fit into a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, not become any shining star or big deal, or just how do you sit in here? Now, I never dreamed and never thought, and I still don't think of today most of the time, that I am worthy of anybody's help, of anybody's time, of anybody's effort to help me do anything. I don't believe that a lot of times today, I don't believe way down deep inside of me that I'm worthy enough to take my sponsor's time out of his busy life with some little nickel and dime crappy little deal that I got going on, which is usually of my own making, to take up his precious time by whining to him about something. Well, he wouldn't listen anyhow, but what the hell difference was it make? I'd like to. But I came out of the penitentiary, and I don't know anything about it. I know a lot about Alcoholics Anonymous. I know so much about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have some degree of comfort, some degree of peace. I have some understanding of a God of my very own. I have some understanding of trying to carry the message inside the penitentiary to my fellow convict. I have some understanding about trying to do all that stuff, but I really didn't know the one basic ingredient that is a necessity for a guy like me, and I suppose like you if you're an alcoholic, how to live amongst you. How to take my place in Alcoholics Anonymous, take my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous, and just become a servant, just become one among many. I didn't know how to strip away the masquerade of my images that I had, of the gangbanger, or the drug dealer, of the big-time convict, or the wannabe baseball star, or whatever it was, all these sick images that I had created and built around me, I didn't know anything about them. It began the night that my sponsor, Norm Alpe, told me he was going to be my sponsor. It began my introduction to this fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, how to behave here and what to do. I didn't have the slightest idea that I was biting off a lot more than I could chew that night. He said to me, "I'm going to be your sponsor." I didn't ask him. I didn't think I needed one. I thought maybe all I had to do was come down here and lay by the pool, and that would do it. I tell you, all that ink and plastic out there is getting to me. And I'm not talking about credit cards. I don't judge, I've just been observing the facts out there. So I said to this man, Norm Alpe, who I had met while I was in the penitentiary, I said to him, "Well, what do you want me to do?" He said, "Why do you ask me?" And I said, "Well, you just told me you're going to be my sponsor, Norm. What am I supposed to do?" And he said, "Well," I said, "why don't you just do what I do?" And I said to him, "What is it you do, anyhow?" And he said, "Well, if you do what I do, then you'll know what I do. It's a great mystery of sponsorship, monkey see, monkey do." Really true. I mean, but there's a lot of people hanging around Alcoholics Anonymous today wearing monkey suits that ain't monkeys. I'm sorry to tell you that. They'll tell you all kinds of stuff. "Oh, you don't have to go there. You don't have to do that." "Oh, really? Come on, come on. It's not necessary for have commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous. Just show up. Don't drink if your butt falls off." That's a great one. I love that one. You know, be anything you want to be. Just be do anything you want to do. Just don't drink if your butt falls off. I didn't have a sponsor like that. I haven't had ever had. I've only had two sponsors, and neither one of them have been like that. Neither one of them. I mean, they set such a pace for me that it's kind of hard for me to catch up without going out of breath. And Norm was like that. He would let me get by with nothing. He was absolutely perfect for what I needed. Absolutely perfect at that moment. Now, I had an old man who was like a father to me that I loved probably more than anything. And he was like a father to me. And he just taught me what a father teaches a child. That's all. He and his wife basically adopted me. Was the only set of parents that I ever knew. But my sponsor was an entirely different thing. He said things to me like, "Get a job and go to work. You're a bum." I promptly told him that I was not a bum. I told him that I am an AA member. And he said, "No, then you're an AA bum because bums don't work." And then he had all kinds of little silly things I was supposed to do, like I wasn't supposed to drive a car. And his reason for that, was, I didn't think was very appropriate. I didn't have a driver's license. And it meant, he said, well, how long has it been? I said, well, it was suspended in 1948 for the rest of my natural life. And he looked at me and he said, well, it looked like you're going to have public transportation for the rest of your natural life. And I was so afraid. You know what his phrase was to me to get me to pay attention when I started to question anything he told me? If you don't do this, you may drink. You may drink. Now, he didn't say, you better do this or I'm going to fire you. You better do this or you're going to have a bad time. He had the key phrase for a guy like me. He said, you may drink. It still rings in my ears to this very day. If I don't do certain things, I may drink. And what frightens me is not drinking or not getting loaded. I may drink and live. And that scares the hell out of me. And I don't know what it does for you. But I may drink and live. And I don't want to go back into that nightmare ever again. He used to say to me, if you get in trouble, call me. I'd call him up at 11, 12 o'clock at night just to see how sincere he was. He'd answer the phone and I'd say to him something, you know, like I'd been in a meeting and the subject wasn't what I wanted. Or somebody looked at me cross-eyed or something, you know, or gave me one of them looks like I wasn't really the most popular person in the area anyhow because I had a bad, different kind of record than most people in AA in those days. Some people were even writing letters to New York to see if they could keep me out of meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, which didn't really make me feel welcome, if you want to know the truth. And I'd go to these meetings, and it'd be sometimes I'd go to participation meetings, like all newcomers, so I could participate. I didn't go to learn anything. I went to participate. That's what people go to participation meetings, to participate. They don't want to learn anything. I've never learned anything in a participation meeting, if you want to know the truth. Because I'm always trying to figure out what I'm going to say when it's my turn. And then when I get down, sit down, I've always tried to figure out what I was supposed to say when I was standing there. And then if they don't call me, I'm pissed off anyhow, for Christ's sake. It's just awful. It's a terrible situation. So he said, well, why don't you just go to 3 meetings a week and don't say anything? It's impossible for a newcomer to go to 3 meetings a week and not say anything. But I still do that today. I still have 3 regular meetings today that I go to and sit and listen and say nothing. Nothing. I don't participate in the meeting other than the fact I have a commitment to do a job in a meeting. I have the commitment to be at those meetings. And I have a commitment to sit in my seat and talk to newcomers when I'm asked to talk to newcomers after the meeting or before it. 3 meetings a week. And I said to him, well, when I'm speaking, he said, that don't count. I said, why not? You just listen to you, and that's bum information anyhow. Oh, you guys think Clancy's tough. Norm Alpy was a piece of work. I mean, I had a guy come to me one time, he said, Norm Alpy's such a wonderful person. I said, you may think so. He didn't sponsor you, for Christ's sake. I used to have to call him up every once in a while to check him out. I remember calling him up one night, and I said to him, Norm, he said, what do you want, jackass? Some of us have to work tomorrow. I mean, always did it to me. I just scared. I had to get a job to keep that phrase out of the conversation. I said, Norm, my program ain't working. He said, why don't you try ours? Hung up. Jeez. This is 12 o'clock at night. You can't go back to sleep like that. Trying to figure out what he's talking. Call him back up. What do you mean by that? He said, jackass, your program never did work. You let me tell you about your program, jackass? I said, yeah, tell me about it. I got it going out here, Norm. He said, your program, jackass, got you crawling around a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary at the ripe old age of 26. That's your program, Johnny. How do you like it? He said, and on a part-time basis, our program, it's given you a few months of sobriety and peace. Our program. It was always not singular. It was always more than one. It's always been our program. It's never been my program. It's never been my anything. It's never been that egotistical word, I, me. You know, mine. It's always ours. There wasn't any Alcoholics Anonymous until two alcoholics got sober. There wasn't. So the one singular means nothing. It's just a singular. We can't stay sober by ourselves if we're alcoholic. Now, we can stay sober by ourselves if we're heavy drinkers. We can stay sober by ourselves if we're more than heavy drinkers. Sometimes we can even stay sober if we're just drug addicts. I can't stay sober by myself. And the reason I can't stay sober by myself, when I'm sober, I am restless, irritable, and discontented because I have this illness of a spiritual nature way down deep inside of me. It's always been my restlessness. My sponsor taught me, and my sponsor today still teaches me, that the way I put this restlessness at ease is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. It's to do what I can do. You never know when you're going to help somebody, he tells me. And it's true. Norm was adamant about that. When I'd ask him things, well, why can't I drive a car? He'd say, people like me, Johnny, have a right to be protected from jerks like you. Geez, I didn't ask him for that kind of stuff. I remember one night, this is my favorite story with Norm Alpe. It was a hot July night. I remember and I didn't have a car, so I called him. Norm, I know you're going by here on that meeting to Santa Ana tonight in that little clubhouse over there on Main Street. Would you come by and pick me up, and could I go to the meeting with you, please? See how nice I'm getting and calm and peace. All right, jackass, I'll be there at 6 o'clock. Be standing on the street corner. I ain't waiting. Well, I did something that newcomers are prone to do, but shouldn't. But it's hard for them not to do. I started to think about it. My mind started to wander to Santa Ana, to this little clubhouse over there on Main Street that had a one-car garage attached to this house that was the AA meeting place. It was about half the size of that section over there and about half the size back there, and everybody smoked. You could not see the podium sitting in the front row. Well, I started to think about that because I'd been to that clubhouse. I started to think about that, so I started to think, well, going to be hot in there. And it's July. So I got out my new tank top, my new shorts, put my feet in my thong, slicked back my hair and put my shades on, and went out and stood on the street corner and waited for old Norm to come and get his prize. Old Norm drove up, took one look at me, and drove off. He taught me a very valuable lesson that night. I called him up at midnight when I knew he'd be resting. I was irritating. I don't know how many of you got people who you sponsor who are irritating, but payback time now, I'll tell you that. I called him up and I said, Norm. And he said, what do you want? I said, you left me standing on the street corner like I'm an idiot. He says, you are an idiot. You act like an idiot, you behave like an idiot, and even more than that, you dress like an idiot. I said, oh. He said, I want to ask you a question. Well, that changed the whole complexion. I wanted to know what he wanted me to answer for him. He said, I want you to know, would you go to your church dressed like that, Johnny? I said, no, I wouldn't. He says, you ain't going to mine dressed like that either. He gave me a very valuable piece of lesson. He said to me, whenever you go anywhere, you have to dress up to your peers. You don't dress down to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't have to come down on our level and wallow around with us to come to our meetings, Johnny. You ought to try to raise yourself up to another level so you would come up to our level when you come to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. What a great piece of wisdom that is. A lot of people talk about things, about how people dress when they go to meetings, like it's some type of a ritual or not. It's nothing more than that. It's just showing some love for the people to try to raised, come up to their level. I mean, if you're above everything else, you really don't have to do anything like that. If you're raised, but see, my sponsor, strong sponsorship, does not put up with that kind of nonsense. They do, strong sponsorship does not let you think you've risen to the cream of the crop. Strong sponsorship just keeps you right here. Just one among many in here. That's why strong sponsorship, and strong sponsorship, wherever you find it, find great enthusiasm for this fellowship and this program of recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous. People want to do things. They want to do better. I found out in my own life, in the years that I've been in, alcoholics want to do better. They want somebody. We were talking about it before the meeting, Walter and I were. It seems like that they want, these newcomers, they want you to give them things to do. They don't want you to say, oh, that's okay. Don't drink if your butt falls off. Oh, too bad you missed the meeting the other night. I remember a long time ago, I heard a guy talk one time in a meeting, and he was talking about going to this meeting. And he called this guy called up the next day and said, I didn't make it to the meeting last night. And he said, yeah, I know. He said, how was the speaker? He said, it was good. He said, what did I miss? He said, I don't know what you were supposed to hear. So how would I know what you missed? What a great message that is. These people are amazing with their wisdom. Amazing, these people. I don't know what, you know, if you don't want to go to the meeting, that's fine, but don't ask me what you missed. I don't know what you're supposed to. I get something out of every meeting I go to, even if it's a resentment, for Christ's sake. I get a lot of things out of the meeting. Really? Yeah. I mean, Clancy sometimes on Wednesday night, I sit alongside him, he thinks I pray all through the meeting. I do it. I'm saying, Jesus Christ, where did that one come from? He just nudges me. Kind of quietly. It's an amazing thing how lucky I've been to have these people in my life. No nonsense. No bouncing around. No easy, take it easy. Yeah, you don't have to go to the meeting, for Christ's sake. Just cool it. Shade it out there. Soak up the sun. And if you feel like it, go out to dinner tonight. If you have time left over, come to the meeting. Ooh. I even feel guilty going on vacation and missing my meeting. I really do. I almost have to bite my lip to call Clancy and tell him I can't make it Wednesday because we're going on vacation for a couple of days. Isn't that amazing? Well, why would that be? I guess it's because it's ingrained in me. Ingrained in me. That I need everything I hear in meetings about. I need to be near my sponsor. I need to watch my sponsor. I stayed as close to Norm as I could stay for the 22 years I had him. I mean, I went where he went. I took newcomers to hear him talk. You know, I did everything. I never will forget the day that I got probably one of the greatest blessings that I ever got. I was called in and issued a temporary driver's license so I could drive back and forth to work. I remember calling Norm up and saying to him how proud I was. I had this driver's license. I was going to be able to drive a car now. I wasn't going to have to beg anything. You know what he told me? He said, well, maybe you can get a whole driver's license and you can drive somebody else to a meeting sometime. I never thought of that. All I'm thinking about, man, I got a car now. I can drive. I can go where I want to go and do what I want to do when I want to do it. The self-centeredness never seemed to leave just because you get sober and work these steps. It's because you come into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and you have a sponsor and he's stronger than your head, or you start to sponsor people and they come stronger. And the self-centeredness never seems to abide and go away. It may be in your life, but it never had done so in mine. It still sits there. It's still the burning thing. It's still the stumbling block of my life, is my selfishness and my self-centeredness. And the thing that separates me from that more than anything else, it's not the meeting, it's not the book, it's not the people, it's my sponsor. It's always been that way. It's been that way for 47 years on a continuous basis. And I hope it's that way for another 47 years. Because that's the thing that separates me from absolute and permanent damage. You know why? I've been sober a long time. You know why? I'm well known in AA in some places. You know why? I sponsor a lot of people. You know why? I've started meetings, very successful meetings. Going, I sponsor them. I got a good life. My children are growing. I have grandchildren and great-grand. All these things, I've got that. That does not sit well with a clown like me. It just doesn't. Man, these are my children. These are my grandchildren. These are my great-grand. The Sunday after Christmas, I had my two daughters, my four grandsons, and my four great-granddaughters for breakfast. That's something, isn't it? For a tongue-chewing, babbling idiot drunk like me, who hadn't even got enough sense to stay out of the penitentiary on a day-to-day basis. Isn't that amazing? Where did that come from? Oh, people could tell you it come from the book. Well, yeah, I worked the steps. People could say, oh, yeah, I go to meetings, yeah. Going to meetings, just be going to meetings by itself, doesn't serve any purpose whatsoever. Just to go take up space in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and not become a working part of that meeting, not become an occupying place of that meeting, have a thing to do, a reason for being there, a commitment for being there. Or the commitment to the meeting is number one. And then have a little job so you kind of justify your seat sitting in there. Those are the things that sponsorship pushes you to doing. And the reason they do it is because they're doing it. See, that's the secret. If your sponsor ain't doing it, you sure as hell I ain't going to do it. Nobody watches Clancy any closer than I do. He's under a microscope where I'm at. I watch him like a hawk. Spend much time with him I can so I can watch him like a hawk. You know why? It's not because I'm going to judge him. I just would like to take it easy sometime myself. And you can't follow a rocket ship at a slow pace. You got to move to keep going. Norm was like that. I mean, he even talked fast. He gave a four-hour talk in 15 minutes, for Christ's sake. Yeah, I mean, I've had people from Texas walk up to him and say, will you slow it down? My wife has never heard you talk. And she'd like to get at least three words out of it. It was amazing to me how these people would do this thing. They just go, and then my Papa Chuck, Jesus. I mean, everybody talk about what a great spiritual giant Chuck was. You know what he was? The most active man I've ever met in Alcoholics Anonymous. He was into action. He was into fellowship. He was in the love of you people. He wanted to carry this message. See, that's the cloak that I was raised in. That's the garment that these people gave me. So when Norm died and Papa got sick, where am I going to go? Oh, I had a lot of information from a lot of well-meaning people. But I ended up going the only place that I could be direct. I had to go to somebody who was into AA like I'm into AA. Not somebody who just wanting to go to it or going sitting in the Alano Club once in a while, four or five times a week. I had to go find somebody who's on the firing line of Alcoholics Anonymous. Why? Because my life is in jeopardy here. This is not I've got it done now. I used to do it 40 years ago, so I'm not going to do it anymore. I see that time and time and time and time again. I hear people get up at these podiums all the time and tell me what they used to do when they were new. All the good things they got out of this when they were new. They did this when they were new. They went on panels when they were new. They went on this when they were new. They did this when they were new. But now they don't do it anymore. But here's what bothers me. They don't make the people they sponsor do it either. So where does it end? If the actions of the people who went before us cease and get watered down, what are we saying to the thousands of people who will come here after we're gone? What about the great legacy that Bill Wilson gave to Dr. Bob, or that Abby gave to Bill? What about the great legacy that these people left you and I? Of not so much caring about whether we're sober all the time, but how we can pass this along for the generations of people to come. Where does that legacy have? Now, If I'm going to pass on the only true success story that I know of, I've got to look deep within the actions that I was given when I was new and maintain those actions right up to this very day. 47 years later, I still have to continue the same type of actions that I took when I first got my first instruction from my sponsor. I can go back and read the book Alcoholics Anonymous all I want. I've read it. I've taken people through it. I've talked about the steps. I've talked about the traditions. I talk about the con. I can do all those simple things. But that doesn't mean a hell of beans if I don't try to carry on this legacy that's been passed on to me. If I somehow kind of water it down and take it easy and back off a step or two now, then the people I sponsor are going to back off and take a step or two back. They're not going to do it easy. And the nature of the illness is very simple to me. Back enough generations back, and it won't be here. It won't be here for the newcomers. It won't be here for my great-grandchildren if they need it, or your grandchildren or your great-grandchildren. It won't be here. So it's not all about me anymore. You know, I'm sober. I got a good life. I got a strong sponsor that I love. I got a group of guys around me that I just love. They're like, most of them are like my kids, for Christ's sake. Part of the great legacy of making up for my death of my baby brother are these young people that I love that I sponsor. My sponsor told me how to do that. I didn't know how to overcome this. I didn't know how to overcome this nightmare that I killed my baby brother. I didn't know how to undo that in 1951. My sponsor told me how to do it. He told me in 1961, write a letter to him. Tell him what you would do. Go out and sit at his gravesite. Clean it up. For the last 47 Christmases of my life, I go sit at my baby brother's gravesite. And I'm not telling you it's gone. Some things you're just going to have to live with if you're an alcoholic. But you can live with them. And you know how you live with them? The way my sponsor told me how to live. How you doing? My name's Johnny. Are you new here? You need a ride to the meeting? You need a ride home from the meeting? What can I do for you? Wander around the meeting and shake hands. You know, just make the parade go on in there. Just make it go. Get up and walk around. Don't just go sit in the meeting and drop your butt in the chair and wait for us to entertain you. Just wander around. Make sure somebody's there. I do it. And it's not because I'm wonderful or I want to be popular or anything. You know, I don't want to hear these things when people say, oh, we hope you're welcome. Then they go sit down over here and hope you find your way. How are you going to find a newcomer if all you do is go sit in your damn seat when you first get there? I get to the Wednesday night meeting at 5 o'clock. The meeting don't start till 8. After I make coffee that nobody really appreciates. And I talk to a couple of guys that I sponsor. Go out and meet my sponsor at the car. People call me a brown nose and kiss ass for that. That's fine. I look at them and smile. They say, what are you smiling about? I said, the thing that worries me. He said, what's that? I said, if anything happens to him, I may have to sponsor you. Oh. I love my sponsor. My sponsor is my life whole in this thing called life. Now, I love my lovely wife, don't get me wrong. I love my children, and I love my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, and I love a bunch of you people, don't get me wrong. But I adore my sponsor. Warts and all, I adore my sponsor. You know why? Because he's a human being, a basic human being. And I worshiped Chuck Chamberlain for a long time because he was my father. I hung on every word he said. I tried to emulate everything he said. I tried to do whatever he said. And once in a while, I just try to say something back to him that I heard him say. You know, like a little parrot mocking something. And he'd say to me, son, that's not the way I said it. So after two or three of those rebuffs, I'm smart enough not to say nothing. Just... So I remember one night I rode to Santa Maria with him when he gave a talk, and you know, it was a one-day trip. I mean, we just went to Santa Maria, he talked, and turned around, and we come back. about midnight, and we stopped at a little cafe, and he went in there and he bought a package of Rolaids. And we got out in the car, and he opened up that Rolaids and took them. And I thought, thank God he's got gas. I made him a human being right in front of my very eyes. See, I don't know how you are. I really don't. And it's hard for me to see you through my eyes. I only know that I am absolutely, totally incapable of loving anything that's perfect. It scares me, frightens me. And I was frightened of that old man. And he loved me like his only son. I know that as well as I'm standing here. I know that from the bottom of my heart. And I was frightened to death of him. But when he swallowed those Rolaids that night and burped, I tell you, that was it. And luckily for me, in the last year he lived, I've got to watch him slowly, surely die in front of my eyes. But I was there. That's the secret. I was there. And what was I doing there? I was trying to give back to somebody who gave something to me, which is what the message is in Alcoholics Anonymous. The message of Alcoholics is not me getting sober and staying sober for all these many years and having this good life. The message of Alcoholics Anonymous is, I've been given a great deal. Let me give it to you. Let me give you this wonderful life that's been given to me. Here are the actions that I took that got me to this wonderful life that I'm living. This is the actions that I took that can tell you in an open, I love my sponsor. These are the actions that I have taken that has brought me to these points. These are the actions I have taken that made me adore that old man that I love so much. So much. My sponsor, when my papa died, we had a little service for him down there in Corona Del Mar. And I thought, that's the end of it. And Mom and I and Bill and Carol, baby sweetheart, took him out on the boat and dumped his ashes. That's twice. And I was true, and one of his last requests was that Clancy and I take him to his last meeting. And I went down to see Clancy, and I was sitting there, and I'm so full of self, so full of self-centeredness, and such a hole inside of me because I'd lost this father of mine. And I'm sitting there with Clancy, and I'm looking at him, and somebody handed him something. And I said to him, sponsor can't do it. He says, you can't do what? I said, I buried him twice. I can't do it again. It's beyond me. And he looked at me with all the love that a sponsor has for a selfish, self-centered, self-seeking individual. He says, you're really a selfish son of a bitch, aren't you? And that really shocked me. And I said, he says, you think you're the only one who wants to say goodbye to him? He said, you got an option, Johnny. You can either lead the meeting or talk at it, but you're going to be there. Left to my devices, without that kind of love coming back at me. And see, that's love. Just patting people on the head anymore and saying, oh, you don't have to do that, just blah, 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 blah. That's not love. That's overlooking and making allowances. Love is, don't do that, you may die. That day, in my sorrow and my self-pity and my sponsor loved me enough to snap me out of it by a few simple words, by telling me what's wrong with me in my moment of crisis. It wasn't one of my better moments in life. I don't think I've ever been any lower than that. Even when Norm dropped dead, I wasn't as low as the day that old man died and I had buried him twice. My sponsor, because of his love for me, gave me the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. You can either lead the meeting or you can speak at it. I led the meeting. Very simple. Very simple. That's what sponsorship is. Don't you let any of these fallible, egotistical driven people try to tell you that sponsorship is anything more than direct love for one individual for another. If they don't have your best interest at heart, they don't love you. They don't give a damn whether you make it or not. If they allow you to do anything you want to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, they allow you to take one of these Burger King type of attitudes, have it your way, Alcoholics Anonymous kind of deal. You have all these, oh, I used to do that, but I don't do that anymore because, well, you know, I'm a little older now, or blah, 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 blah. We got all kinds of excuses. I'm getting a little long in the tooth myself. I know it doesn't show, but it's here. You know what has happened? Some of the guys that I sponsor come and drive me to various meetings. Now, if they didn't, I'd drive anyhow. Danger out there, dark, under dark sometime. But I go to the meeting. But they have learned, like I learned, that as much time as they can spend with their sponsor, the better off they are. Because there's something about that security of being with your sponsor and knowing that it cares for you. Or if it's a girl, know that she cares for you. There's something about that strange little feeling of security. If it's only for an hour, if it's only for 2 hours, if you don't have that, you've missed the whole damn ball game. That, to me, is what sponsorship is. That's what it's all about. I feel secure, I feel safe, I feel comfortable, and I feel at ease when my sponsor's in the room with me. I even feel better when I know he's in the building. True. I hope you feel that way about yours. I hope you find somebody in your life who will make you feel that way about them. But you talk about a God of your very own. What's that? You talk about security. What's that? You talk about comfort and peace inside. What is that? That is about security. You know there's somebody in this world that cares more about you than you care about yourself most of the time. What a great feeling that is. I had that feeling with my papa. I found myself after he died from time to time headed toward Laguna Beach. And I have to stop and say, he ain't there no more. So I turn around and drive to the Wednesday night meeting and sit with my sponsor and with my friend, some of them who are no longer with us. If you ain't got that, boy, I hope you find somebody that will give it to you. I hope you can get in that line, that long gray line they want to talk about, that legacy, that chain of legacies that's been passed down from one alcoholic to another since 1935. I hope you find that kind of thing. I hope you find that great legacy of strength that comes from one alcoholic pulling another one along and letting you stick your hand out and pull another one along behind you. It's the greatest, miraculous situation that I could possibly ever think of. It does me well. And though I may not be the best husband in the world, I may not be the best father in the world, I may not be the best grandfather or great-grandfather in the world, I may not even be the best friend in the world, but I'm a much better member of Alcoholics Anonymous because of my sponsor, because of Chuck Chamberlain, and because of Norm Alpie and the legacy that they left me that I still hang on to for dear life today, because sometimes I feel like I'm in deep water without a preserver through my own action and through my own self-centeredness. But just let me go sit in a meeting with my sponsor, or let me go sit with somebody that I sponsor, and let me put my arm around them and tell them, even though I don't feel like it's going to be okay. I don't know how many times on Wednesday night my sponsor reaches over and taps me on the leg and says, "We got it pretty good, huh, kid?" And we sure do. I wish you all well. I thank you from the very bottom of my heart for allowing me to do this. Thank you.